I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union. Before we start this week's episode of NXIVM on Trial, I wanted to take a moment to note that the paper's investigative coverage of Keith Raniere and his organization was supported primarily by ART subscribers, whose readership paid the salaries of reporters, copy editors, and digital designers, as well as the lawyers who provided the good counsel that made our work bulletproof against this highly litigious group. If you subscribe to the Times Union, thanks. If you don't, please consider supporting our watchdog reporting. Without you, the truth might never come to light.
The prosecution lied to the court. The prosecution tampered with evidence.
I want my name back. I want my good name back.
All right, and now to discuss what has been an extremely eventful week in the NXIVM story, I'm happy to be joined by our Cops and Courts reporter, Rob Gavin. Rob, we're talking Thursday morning. You are freshly back from Brooklyn, where you were present for the fairly epic sentencing of Claire Bronfman, the Seagram's heiress, who has been a member of the upper reaches of NXIVM's leadership for years and years, a close associate who still remains a close associate of Keith Raniere.
This sentencing happened yesterday, and it lasted almost 5 hours in a second floor courtroom in Brooklyn Federal Court. This was about as long a sentencing proceeding as you will probably ever see. And really, the thing that jumps out right from the start of this is that Claire Bronfman was facing, according to the recommendation of her own attorney, wanted 3 years probation. On her sentencing guidelines, it was 21 to 27 months. The feds wanted a really high sentence of 5 years. And now the judge came in and disagreed with all of them and imposed a higher sentence of 81 months. Which, if you're like me and you don't like doing math, that comes down to 6 years and 9 months in prison. He also imposed a $500,000 fine, as well as a $6 million forfeiture and $96,000 to pay back a woman from Mexico who had worked for Claire Bronfman under the promise that she would have a sort of manufacturing executive role in XOSO, which was one of the many NXIVM affiliates under the promise of $3,600 a month. And 3 months later, she hadn't gotten any money, didn't get a salary. And the upshot was she ended up joining Keith Raniere's master slave group and appearing in Brooklyn Federal Court as a victim against Claire Bronfman.
There were 10 women who spoke, who gave victim impact statements. One of them was Barbara Boucher, who has been a sort of longtime opponent of NXIVM in the sense that NXIVM targeted her. She's a former girlfriend of Keith Raniere. She cut ties with the organization more than a decade ago and found herself targeted by NXIVM for criminal charges as well as civil charges. You spoke to her outside the courtroom after the sentencing, and she said that she was stunned by the sentence of 81 months.
I'm overwhelmed at the sentence. I never expected 7 years. I really thought maybe he'd give her the maximum of 5. And when I heard him say 81 months, I was speechless.
She was very pleased, very surprised that the judge went way overboard than what even prosecutors and victims had hoped in imposing, really sending a message. Barbara Boucher spoke at length to me, and then she spoke to a number of other reporters mentioning how she, you know, felt in many ways that, you know, she hadn't done anything wrong and ended up being in the situation where she ended up upsetting Raniere, incurring his wrath, spending $14 million of, you know, litigation over the years, all because she had decided to separate with NXIVM when she left in 2009.
I just want my reputation back. I want my name back. I want my good name back. And I deserve it, and I earn it, and
I was innocent here, and she extorted my value and destroyed my name. I'm not the extortionist. She is.
Because one of the other victim impact statements, very emotional statement, was by Kristen Keefe. She was sort of the legal liaison for NXIVM, and she mentioned how she stuck up for Barbara Boucher, and as a result, she too incurred the wrath of Keith Raniere. She told a story of how Claire Bronfman had led her to believe that her father, that Claire Bronfman's father, the late tycoon of the Seagram's fortune, was a very vindictive individual, and that if he thought that Keith Raniere had a child, he would hold it against everyone involved.
We should note that Kristen Keefe and Keith Raniere have a son together who is now 13. Kristen Keefe ran from NXIVM in, I believe, 2014.
Correct.
And really, for a long time, maintained a real fugitive existence with her son out of concern that NXIVM would come for her, either legally or in some other fashion.
Yeah, and you really heard that yesterday. Her voice at one point was really breaking. She was in tears and upset about the fact that all she said she really cares about is her child. She had mentioned how Claire Bronfman established a trust for another child he has with the woman, one of the other women he's involved with, who was the eldest of three Mexican sisters. That's a whole nother story in and of itself. But the fact that Claire Bronfman had established a trust fund for that child and not Kristen Keefe's child was obviously very upsetting to Kristen. And she just sort of essentially said how, as did a few witnesses, how Claire Bronfman's lawyer's argument that she was just had donated to specific causes like the Ethical Science Foundation and other things, which her lawyer painted as these really great causes, and that she had donated money toward commodities, that the reality is this was money that was being given to NXIVM, $100 million to Keith Raniere, which included $67 million to commodities for Keith Raniere, $32 million to the Ethical Science Foundation, where if you heard Claire Bronfman's attorney, Ronald Sullivan, talk about it, you would think that this Ethical Science Foundation was just this amazing, wonderful thing that had sponsored this movie, Mike Tourette, about NXIVM's efforts to cure Tourette syndrome. And really nowhere mentioned in there was the fact that this group included efforts to do brain experiments on people. And we did hear part of that from another former NXIVM member, Evie Navarez, who said how a woman in the program was going through some serious problems. And as a result of her therapy, she had to be sort of her gatekeeper, had to actually watch her. And one day this woman just runs out of the house and runs through the snow, and she has to follow her. And she's calling Nancy Salzman saying, "What do I do? What do I do?" Terrified that this woman's going to run into the road. And that was all part of the Ethical Science Foundation. And we've written stories about that, how Dr. Brandon Porter lost his medical license for these things. So it's not like these were the most virtuous things in the world. Over and over again, a recurring theme of the statements, and there was a lot of familiar faces if you've been following the NXIVM story, including Sarah Edmondson, Tony Natale.
Many of them appearing via video. I think Sarah
correct.
And Kristen Keefe were both appearing in the court via video.
No, Kristen Keefe was there in person. I actually spoke to her briefly afterward. She was there in person. Tony Natale was there in person. Barbara was there in person. But Sarah Edmondson, Evie Navarez, and a former member of Raniere's quote-unquote master slave group, DOS, spoke via video. And other people, there was a recurring theme of let Keith Raniere go. He's destroying you. You've allowed him to influence you. You'll commit more crimes if you stay with him. It was almost as much of a sentencing impact for Raniere as it was for Claire Bronfman. And there were some people expressing beliefs like Susan Doans and even Barbara Boucher that they thought maybe Claire had a good person within her, but that Raniere, I think in the words of Susan Doans, who had been a leader at NXIVM, that Raniere's claws had gotten into her and that essentially she is Raniere at this point.
When the time came for Claire Bronfman to speak, she offered sort of tacit apology to at least one of the women, and that prompted a real clapback from federal judge Nicholas Garufas, right?
Correct. I mean, when she mentioned, first Claire says that she's sorry for what she's done, apologized for the crimes that she had actually committed or pled guilty to, but then she turns to the woman who she admitted exploiting, under the woman who had basically come here from Mexico and then ended up not making any money, essentially. She turns to her and apologizes, says, "I'm sorry." It almost seemed like she was, seemed almost genuine. The judge clearly did not think it was genuine. And he said, "At this moment, in this very courtroom, Ms. Bronfman is doing again. She's doing this again." And then he got really angry and said, "This judge is not blind. Ms. Bronfman, I saw what you just did, and I'm speechless." And then there was this long, awkward silence. It was really awkward. It was intense. And he waited, and then the judge went back to reading the statement. And in kind of a remarkable thing, which you do not see very often, the judge's statement, he read it into the record. It is in the record now, and it's in files in Brooklyn Federal Court. And he mentioned that it would be filed in Brooklyn Federal Court. Now, he did deviate from it a few times, such as then. And another time, he, even though he used the word sword to describe Claire Bronfman, he said it again at times when he went off script. He was appalled at the fact that she was holding visas over not only this woman, but several other immigrants. What I thought was interesting is in the courtroom, you know, I mentioned that Keith Raniere had been involved with the eldest of three Mexican sisters. So the oldest sister, who he's still with and has a child with, is still loyal to Keith Raniere. There's a youngest sister who Raniere had been sexually involved with since she was 15, and that's one of the reasons he's convicted, or the reason he's convicted of child exploitation and possession of child pornography. And there's a middle sister who, because she kissed another man, dared to kiss another man, Raniere ordered her to be locked, I'm sorry, not locked, but to be banished to her family's second floor room in a Half Moon townhouse for the better part of 2 years. And that woman was in the courtroom yesterday in the back. She didn't give a speech, but she was there with her attorney, Neil Glazer, and just kind of taking it in. And it was very hard. If you testify, it was, you obviously recognized her, and someone who was clearly devastated by Nexium. Maybe she's saving up to give a statement next month at Raniere's. So you had that in the courtroom. You had Moira Penza, who's no longer with the U.S. Attorney's Office, who was the lead prosecutor, really the person who, along with Tanya Hajar, another prosecutor, really brought this case to fruition. She was there. So you had two, not one, but two overflow rooms of lots of people there. And at the end of the day, when I walked out, I saw several members of a group we now know is now changing their name to Make Justice Blind, former Nexium members, including at least one member of who was in DOS, and they were all there. And I asked them if they wanted to comment, and none of them wanted to comment.
So 81 months for Claire Bronfman, that's now in the rearview mirror. But what you just spoke about, the group of Nexium loyalists who have been mounting this effort, that very much pertains to the future, not only the sentencing of Keith Raniere, but of the other women, all of them women who have pleaded guilty to crimes before the trial of Keith Raniere in the spring of last year. What they are attempting to do, we found out over the course of the last week, is present these sort of affidavits or petitions to federal prosecutors to make them affirm that they did not commit basically a set of misdeeds in the prosecution of Keith Raniere. The prosecutors in the Eastern District of New York presented all of this to the judge and made a very strong case that essentially it was all orchestrated by Keith Raniere. In addition to that, they got sign up from a group of what might be referred to as advocates for the exonerated, including Amanda Knox, the young woman famously convicted in Italy of the murder. She was an exchange student. She was convicted of the murder of her roommate in a case that brought international attention. She was ultimately exonerated. You exchanged emails with her over the weekend in which she said, look, I'm not saying anything about Keith Raniere's guilt or innocence, but I believe in standing up for proper prosecution and the rule of law. But it was a strange twist in the case, without a doubt.
Yeah, Amanda Knox told me, she said, I was contacted by some former members of NXIVM who claim that Mr. Raniere has been wrongfully convicted and that the story being told in the media is wrong. She said straight up, I personally do not know enough about the case to make any judgments about whether his conviction is wrongful or not. These supporters of Mr. Raniere asked me to sign a petition asking the prosecutors in the case to affirm some principles of prosecutorial conduct that any prosecutor should be able to affirm, such as engaging in perjury, tampering with evidence, not threatening witnesses. And then she ended it saying, I signed the petition because violation of these practices would constitute prosecutorial misconduct, regardless of Mr. Raniere's guilt or innocence. One would have to assume that Amanda Knox has access to Google, has access to media, and that it wouldn't take much reading Keith Raniere's background to see what happened. I mean, again, this is someone who, Keith Raniere, who has been on video, he came out in court evidence talking about how he believes some children are quote unquote perfectly happy having sex with adults and that the age of consent in some countries is 12. And he has not exactly been someone who's been remorseful. In fact, if anything, the thing that's striking about Raniere in the post-conviction stage is that nothing that happened during the trial has affected him in any way, apparently. He's as bold as ever. He wants to write an op-ed about DOS, which is mind-boggling. In his whole case, you think you're going to be surprised in NXIVM, wait 5 minutes, and you'll be more surprised. And this group is calling themselves Make Justice Blind. And it's really much of the same members of what was the group called We Are As You, who were dancing outside the MDC, the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn. A lot of those same people now involved in this Make Justice Blind effort. And they sent, like you mentioned, an affidavit, which was clearly instructed to them by Raniere. You can see the emails. The feds included emails from Raniere to one of these members named Sunil Chakravorty, in which he tells them straight up, hey, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that, so to speak? And one of the questions that Chakravorty asks is, will you support public accountability? I mean, this is very much what NXIVM did. If you listen to their former members over the years, they would try to turn the tables. If you were to complain about NXIVM and say, hey, why is X happening? Why is Y happening? They would turn around and try to make it about you. Well, the issue isn't this, it's what have you done? And that's really what's happening here. If you look at this, Keith Raniere has been convicted of all counts. He's facing prison on October 27th. So what are his former acolytes doing, his current acolytes doing? They are now sending an affidavit to the feds, the people who prosecuted him, saying, hey, were you honest? Were you ethical? I'm trying to ask them to sign petitions and whatnot. And hey, the same way NXIVM got a lot of supporters when they opened, they're still getting supporters here. There's people, the Lighthouse Project, that's a Canadian nonprofit that helps people who are wrongfully accused. I talked to a woman from that group, Diana Davison. She seemed to be very much okay with this effort. She said she didn't know that he was innocent and she wasn't saying he was innocent, but saw no harm in doing this. And even more, what's even more amazing is that members of this group, Make Justice Blind, including Nikki Klein, I didn't see her there yesterday, but I saw the rest of them there yesterday. She's the former actress on Battlestar Galactica. They gave an interview with CBS this morning in which they came out publicly and just threw themselves out there talking about their efforts, their justice reform efforts, and that was something to be seen.
You noted that this group, that their Twitter feed is at Blindfold Her. Considering the subject at hand, that we're talking about a group within NXIVM that in which women were in fact actually blindfolded while they were being branded during these terrible sessions that have been described in, you know, grueling testimony. It really boggles the mind that somebody within the organization didn't maybe think twice about using that as their Twitter hashtag. But I also want to mention, you noted the CBS This Morning interview. Apparently, another sort of prong of Nexium's or the Nexium faithful strategy here is a podcast that apparently includes material that's being recorded out of the federal correctional, you know, detention facility in Brooklyn by Keith Raniere. CBS This Morning got a clip of that, and we'll listen to a little bit of it right now. This is Keith Raniere speaking from behind bars.
The prosecution lied to the court. The prosecution tampered with evidence. The prosecution suborned perjury. And there are more and more points. One of these points the prosecution should never have done. You know, I mean, I was kidnapped. They sealed the document based on a lie. They went and then they broke that seal. There's a whole bunch of things that happened that were just horrendous. If my judge comes and sentences me, he is condoning all of this behavior.
That's Keith touching on many of the themes that his loyalists have been pushing, the idea that the judge acted improperly, that prosecutors acted improperly, that the witnesses lied, and that once again, he's the target of an elaborate smear campaign that might put him behind bars for the rest of his life. So I guess, Rob, last question for you as we wind up is, if you are Allison Mack, if you are Nancy Salzman, if you are any of those women who have pleaded guilty connected to their activities within Nexium, after seeing Claire Bronfman's sentencing, what are you likely thinking right now, would you say?
You've got to be terrified if you are any of these people. I think with the possible exception of Lauren Salzman,
yeah,
who really gave compelling testimony and was a star witness for the prosecution in bringing down Keith Raniere, she'll get what's known as a 5K letter, which the government submits on behalf of cooperating witnesses. But the message is clear that the judge is coming down hard on these people. He is not going to be lenient. And if you're Keith Raniere, I mean, obviously we have to wait and see what happens. But you would think, based on what you heard yesterday, that there's probably about as much chance of the judge dismissing the entire case and praising joining Keith Raniere as there is of him not giving a life sentence. I mean, because that was a message that included the judge's comments about Keith Raniere. Nancy Salzman, obviously, was someone whose name came up a lot yesterday. So she's another one who's got to be very concerned. Allison Mack and the rest of these defendants, who include Kathy Russell, the bookkeeper, the fact that their sentencing is coming up, the judge actually made a point of saying that he wants their sentencing on the record. So he wants these sentencings to start coming up. I think we're going to start seeing these sentencings happen. I think things are going to start to move fairly quickly now that the ball has started rolling, and you know, Raniere obviously will be the biggest fish. But yeah, you'd have to be terrified. You'd have to know that this judge is not fooling around. I don't know how anyone would think he was during the trial, but the fact that Claire Bronfman has stayed loyal to Keith Raniere, and the fact that Raniere is clearly, let's not forget that he told an associate from behind bars he wanted to quote-unquote get scrutiny on the judge. And I should probably mention that the efforts of his followers include a quote-unquote $35,000 innocence challenge, which is along with the podcast. That just shows you there's no remorse there. I don't think the judge is going to see a lot of remorse. I think at this point, if you are one of those former members, you have to be expecting the worst. I don't know that Claire Bronfman was expecting 81 months. I don't know that anybody was expecting 81 months.
Well, and another thing that they might be thinking about that I think we haven't mentioned so far is that Claire Bronfman was taken into federal custody immediately after the sentencing. That is something that at least surprised me. I mean, often in these types of cases, when someone who has pleaded guilty prior to sentencing has remained out on bond, quite often they are given a date to report to federal prison, but she was sent off to the Stone Motel immediately at the conclusion of her sentencing. So that means that if you're Allison Mack or any of the other defendants who have been essentially on bond or on some form of home detention during the pendency of their sentencing, you better think about what you're going to be wearing to court, because those might be the last street clothes you wear in a while.
The judge made an interesting comment toward the very end there, where he said, "I need to consider the extent to which the sentence will operate as a deterrent. Ms. Bronfman's circumstances are rather unique. I don't know how many other multimillionaires are out there ready to devote the limitless resources at their disposal to support pyramid schemes run by dangerous criminals and stifling the voices of their critics and victims." So I think he made clear this was not a typical case. He wanted to send that message. I think every other defendant, they didn't hear it, they probably should. And I should also mention that Claire is going to be in the Metro, as I understand it, she's going to be in the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn, which is also where Ranieri is. And I'm pretty sure that's where Jeffrey Epstein's former right-hand accomplice, allegedly, in his sex trafficking case. So
imagines the conversations in the chow line. Rob, thanks again for all the good work. I feel confident that this will not be the last episode of this podcast. So for Rob Gavin, I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union. Once again, please remember that the Times Union's journalism on Nexium, as well as all of our watchdog journalism, is supported by subscribers to the Times Union. If you fall into that camp, thank you very much, and we'll talk again.
If you're enjoying Nexium on Trial, be sure to check out its sister podcast, The Eagle. I'm Jessica Marshall, host of The Eagle. Each week, we'll take a look inside the newsroom at the Times Union, the Capital Region's oldest and largest newspaper. We'll discuss the week's top stories, and we'll talk to the award-winning reporters who write them. Listen at timesunion.com or wherever you get your podcasts.